Maine's response to the coronavirus crisis. It seems as though everything has changed over the weekend. Public events canceled. Schools announced closures. More people were confirmed positive for COVID-19. And last night, Governor Mills declared a civil state of emergency for Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. As this public health emergency unfolds, Maine Calling aims to answer your questions. Every day this week, we'll focus on a different part of what the coronavirus crisis means for Maine. Today, our guest is Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Jean Lambrew, who oversees the state's largest department and everything from Maine Care to SNAP benefits to long-term care facilities. How is Maine planning to help its more vulnerable citizens? What can we all do to help? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Every day brings new developments in how Maine is reacting to the coronavirus pandemic. And today we will discuss some of the statewide response to COVID-19, especially as we think about Maine's most vulnerable residents. Just letting you know, we did have other Maine Calling shows originally planned for this week, but instead we are lining up shows each day to talk about the coronavirus crisis. If you are looking forward to one of those other programs, we have postponed them indefinitely, but we'll return to the topics. Joining me today is Jean Lambrew. She is Maine's commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, which is Maine's largest department by far. As always, we want to hear from you. This is your opportunity to ask a question of the commissioner. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, please, a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Let's first listen to Governor Janet Mills, who made this announcement yesterday evening.
I have today signed a proclamation that declares a state of civil emergency in Maine related to the coronavirus. Proclaiming a civil state of emergency authorizes state officials to act quickly to delay and to mitigate a potential outbreak in Maine.
Welcome, Commissioner Lambrew, to Maine Calling. You know, we just heard Governor Mills. I know you're standing by her side as she made that announcement. I want to ask you, your department assists some of Maine's most vulnerable people, those who with developmental disabilities, other disabilities, elderly. What actions is your department taking to protect that population during this crisis?
Well, thank you for having me. I'll start by saying we are the home of the Maine Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or Maine CDC, which is at the heart of this response. As you know, the governor convened a coronavirus task force across state government that's led by Dr. Nirav Shah, who is our director of Maine CDC. So part of our job is to support that office. But we also provide insurance to about 300,000 people through Maine Care. We provide food supplements to people, about 180,000 people. We provide subsidized child care for low-income families. And we also have direct responsibility for children in our child welfare system, as well as adults in our adult protective system. So we start with, how do we protect the people that we're accountable for? And that, again, includes vulnerable children and vulnerable adults. We are working aggressively with our team, their care managers, to ensure that we are giving them the right information to protect those children and adults. Secondarily, Dorothea Dix and Riverview Psychiatric Hospitals are also part of state government. So we are making sure that they, like other hospitals in Maine, are prepared so that should there be a detected or presumed positive case in those institutions, they're ready. Third, we engage with healthcare providers throughout the state. So day in, day out, we're working with those partners on the front line to give them the information, the support, the resources, the personal protective equipment, et cetera, to make sure that they can be responding to this epidemic. Lastly, because of our broad mission, we're trying to make sure we touch on those topics that cut across populations and programs, like food. How do we make sure that when children aren't in school, they get their school lunches? How do we make sure that older Mainers who are at home get their meals on wheels? So we're working hard on how do we ensure food supply and food security. We are also working on childcare. One challenge that we have across the state, even before COVID-19, was adequate, affordable childcare. Fast forward, we want to make sure as schools are closing, as childcare centers are closing, we're not pulling our nurses or our first responders or Department of Corrections workers out of their critical jobs to take care of their kids. So we are working across government to find solutions. I will say many of these solutions are in the works. We are not done with them all yet, but we are hard at work day in, day out, trying to help people in Maine navigate the health and human services that we deliver.
What you've just explained sort of starts to touch on just how complicated this is. And I think we'll break down by some of the many things you mentioned. Let's start with MaineCare. As you mentioned, 300,000 people covered by MaineCare. Are people covered by MaineCare able to get, if they are worried about their symptoms, access a free test and free care?
Yes. So COVID-19 testing in MaineCare is covered with no copays, no deductibles. We also are issuing emergency rules to make sure that office copays are waived. We also are anticipating that there may be a need for prescriptions, so we are doing an emergency rule to waive any pharmacy copays. We also want to encourage people to get 90-day supplies rather than 34-day supplies of medications that they need in case they're having trouble getting to their pharmacy. So we're also changing our rules for that. That is consistent with what the governor announced last week, which is an insurance emergency, which is she directed the private insurers to do similar types of policies. First dollar coverage of COVID-19 screening and testing, ensuring that if there's a vaccine, it's an immunization that's covered without a deductible and copay, and that if a person is having trouble getting COVID-19 screening and testing from their local system, they can go out of network and still have that covered. So we are trying to align all of our public and private insurance policies that the state can affect to ensure cost is not a barrier to somebody seeking a diagnosis and treatment.
You mentioned that people are encouraged to get a 90-day supply as opposed to a 30-day supply of their medication. Is that something in which you've been able to reach out to the medical community and get really quick buy-in? Are doctors already prescribing 90-day prescriptions?
Yes, we have been working with Maine CDC on their going to be more regular calls with clinicians across the state of Maine to encourage best practices. We have been providing what are called Health Action Network Alerts, HANS, which is trying to put actionable information in the hands of our frontline providers. And we know that one of the best practices is making sure that people have adequate medication so they don't fall behind, especially if they are worried about going to a pharmacy.
Okay, let's talk about something else you mentioned, 180,000 people on food benefits, SNAP. Is there any change in that benefit in the way it's being implemented?
Sure. So first of all, we are taking advantage of an option to make sure that people who would have lost food supplements under a Trump administration rule that got published a couple months ago won't. So there was a rule that would limit the ability for states to extend food supplement benefits to a bunch of different areas in the state. We were about to lose that on April 1st. We took action to prevent that. So people on food supplement will be able to continue it through the summer and fall. Moreover, we recognize that people are worried about going to eligibility offices or the paperwork that might be required, given the fact that they don't want to come into contact with people who might have COVID-19.
Or that office might be closed.
Yeah. Well, at this point, our offices are open, but we are trying to simplify it. So for food supplement or SNAP, TANF, which is Aspire, the work welfare to work programs, for MaineCare, and even for child care subsidy programs, we are aggressively taking emergency measures to make it easier to sign up. We encourage people to go to the website, My MaineCare Connection, or My Maine Connection, I believe, because you can sign up online. You can call our call center and also get information. It may take some time, but we are trying to encourage people to use the call center, the website, and we are trying to, again, make it as easy as possible so people get the benefits to which they're eligible.
And you're talking about people, I'm guessing here, that may not have been eligible before, but because of the epidemic have lost their job or been furloughed from or laid off from their job.
Well, it is especially important at times like this that you have what are called countercyclical programs. Maincare, SNAP are two good examples, that their income levels are fixed and they're mostly, if not primarily, funded by the federal government. So when the economy is bad and demand goes up, automatically those people will get extra help. I would say we're also hopeful that there was a bill that passed the House of Representatives last Saturday morning called the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that would provide significant help should it pass the Senate. It helps with Medicaid or Maincare, food supplements, provides resources to food banks, knowing that it might be more of a problem for people to use their benefits. It has a range of benefits that would help, including some paid family leave, which, as we all know, may be extra important should this be a prolonged epidemic.
All right. And we will provide a link on our website to My Maine Connection, because I'm sure there are going to be people who going to that site who have not in the past used benefits. You mentioned child care, and I'm thinking this is one of those, to talk about cyclical, I mean, this is something that can be compounded, that the very children who are going to be staying home from school are often the children of people who need to go to work, the nurses, for example, or are people who are working in these agencies that are helping people. What's being done to help families that suddenly need child care because of this coronavirus crisis?
Yeah, it is a top priority for us. We are, first of all, encouraging any family to check with local providers. We are seeing some kids are staying in child care, some are not. Some families are pulling their children out. So availability is something you should check with local child care providers in your area. Second, we are seeking emergency approval from the federal government to simplify the process to create a child care center. We've been approached by several hospitals and nursing facilities to say, hey, we need our workers, but we need to figure out how we fast track creating a pop-up child care center near our facility. We're looking at those options. We also want to make sure that low-income families have the resources to get that child care. So again, are simplifying eligibility for our child care subsidy program. We are also looking at other states to see if there's innovative solutions. Some states are tapping into empty schoolrooms as potential child care sites. There's somewhat different rules for their licensure, but it might be a way to tap into existing space to have that kind of social distancing, the 6 feet away guidance that we're getting from CDC to space out children, space out child care workers to ensure that we have safe child care environments as well as accessible child care options for their parents.
So someplace that's now a large child care center where kids are really close together, maybe being in a larger facility with fewer children in each room?
We're looking at all options.
All right. We're going to go now to Diane Kibben, who's calling from Ocean View at Falmouth. Diane, thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, yes. I'm thankful to be here. Thanks for taking my call.
You know, as all of us have heard in the news this week, so many of the population, one of the populations most vulnerable are older people, and Ocean View and many other independent living and assisted living facilities in Maine are, I know, trying to respond to this crisis as best you can. And I understand there's a case of one of your residents. Tell us how you found out about that and what you're doing now.
Sure. So I'd like to say we've been planning for months, you know, that this is a possibility that we'd be facing. And we've done a number of proactive things to be in a position well to respond. So as you may know, we are a full continuum of care retirement community. So we do have two assisted living communities within Ocean View, and the safety and the wellness of our residents is our top priority. We began planning locally with public officials on March 2nd. We met with Chief Howard Rice, who is the Emergency Medical Agency Director, as well as the Chief of the Falmouth Fire and EMS Services. Him, as well as four of his captains, came over, including Captain Hutchings, who's the Regional EMS Director. So that was really our local planning began there. On the 3rd of March, we sent out a memo to all of our residents to to please take some actions to prepare for this and protect themselves from coronavirus. And then on March 9th, we had a resident council meeting where we again asked the Falmouth Fire and EMS officials to come. Captain Colin Shea did come for an extensive discussion and allowed time for a question and answer session from our residents. And so some residents brought some really great questions from that. That same day, we also implemented a staff travel protocol mandating that any staff returning from travel domestically or internationally to start self-monitoring for symptoms and temperatures for 14 days. And then again on the 10th, we sent out a memo to our residents to advise them of the CDC guidelines that was warning older adults to avoid travel to those advisory countries as well as avoid any cruise ship travel. So this was all before the first case in Maine, which I think the first case was on March 12th. So back to your question, how we were notified, we got a call that was fielded by our director of assisted living, and we were notified of the case of a resident that lived in one of the cottages. And so that was late on Saturday afternoon, and we immediately closed off our assisted living communities. Our director of assisted living happened to be on campus at that time to all visitors, vendors, and non-essential staff. And then Maureen Connolly, who is the executive director of operations, as well as me, came into the office to immediately change the signs on the door to ban all visitors and even residents to our main lodge buildings, anyone who didn't live here. And we devised and crafted a memo that same evening to go out to our main lodge residents and then the next morning to all of our cottage residents. We've been working so closely with a contact at the CDC, Kate Colby. She's been so helpful in advising us on how to handle any staff who may have had contact or residents who may have had contact. Thankfully, we keep lists of group activities, and so we were able to identify individuals that had contact with the person. And all of those people were notified to self-quarantine as of yesterday. So we feel like we got a real good jump start on things, and we're one step ahead as much as we could be. We stepped up security on campus to protect our residents, and we've modified our dining practices to help people who are trying to self-quarantine. You know, we're offering delivery options and takeout options for folks so that they can just hunker down in their homes. At this point, we're advising...
Thank you, Diane. Let me... Go ahead.
Oh, we're advising all of our residents to please to minimize their interactions. So, you know, to refrain from going out if possible.
Diane, if I may, can I ask how he or she is doing, your resident?
I'm not allowed to permitted to give any medical information regarding the resident. So just in order to maintain confidentiality.
And before I let you go, I want to ask what you recommend for other facilities who are sure to experience a positive test result. What have you learned that you would like to share with other assisted living facilities or independent living facilities?
Well, I think doing the preparation beforehand, you know, and running through the scenarios is really the best thing you can do. And, you know, really doing extensive screening now of staff and really limiting all non-essential, really taking a close look at who really needs access to the buildings.
Well, Diane Kibben from Ocean View at Falmouth, thank you so much for calling in. We will be right back after a break. We're talking with DHHS Commissioner Jean Lambrew about the state's coronavirus response. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Modern Pest Services, offering a non-toxic approach to pest control with Anti-C-Mex Smart Pest Control Technology, modernpest.com. By the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom. UMA.edu. And the New England Eating Disorders Program at Sweetser, announcing new outpatient therapy services for people of all ages and genders. Sweetser.org.
The COVID-19 pandemic has already had a devastating impact around the globe. More than 130,000 people have gotten sick. About 5,000 people have died. It's also rocked healthcare and economic systems worldwide. What can be done to stop the spread of the disease, and what can you do to keep yourself safe? Join us for an NPR special report, COVID-19, What You Need to Know.
Coming up tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Do you live in southern Maine, perhaps in the greater Portland area, and have never been able to receive Maine Public Television over the air? Last week, WMEA Channel 26 adjusted its frequency, and the really good news is that the new signal is now stronger than it has been in the past. This means if you live in southern Maine and choose to watch television over the air and not on cable or satellite, if you rescan your television, you may now be able to receive Maine Public Television. For more information on rescanning your television, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the television drop-down for Television Rescan Day.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, I'm talking with the Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, Jean Lambrew, about the statewide response to the coronavirus pandemic. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. Our lines are pretty full right now, but hold on to that phone number and give us a try back if you can't get through. 1-800-399-3566. Commissioner, before the break, we were talking with Diane Kibben from Ocean View in Falmouth and had to go to a break. So I'm wondering if there's anything you wanted to add to that about the response at Ocean View or preparedness at other facilities that serve older people.
I'll add 2 points that the governor stated last night when she was declaring a civil emergency. One is we do recommend restricting visitors and all non-essential healthcare personnel to long-term care facilities except for certain compassionate care situations such as end of life until further notice. She also recommended that all non-urgent medical and dental procedures, elective surgeries, and appointments at hospitals and healthcare providers across the state be delayed. That is, again, between a patient and the doctor or provider about what is urgent and what is not urgent. But we want to make sure we're not straining those frontline healthcare workers who we also need to respond to COVID-19.
All right. Well, thank you. Joining us on the line now is Erin Fogg with Good Shepherd Food Bank. Erin, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us how the coronavirus crisis is affecting your food bank and all of the places that you serve, all of the soup kitchens and other nonprofits and agencies that depend on you.
Sure. Yeah. So food is on the mind of so many people right now, as we know. For our own lives, everyone is stocking up, and we're certainly thinking about how our most vulnerable neighbors are affected and the resources that they need. For those who may not know, Good Shepherd Food Bank is Maine's only food bank in that we source and distribute food to more than 450 partners across the state, including food pantries, soup kitchens, schools, healthcare organizations, and those organizations depend on us to get the food they need to serve our neighbors who are accessing services throughout the state. So we are working as hard as we can to maintain our current base of operations to get all of the food out to the communities. We are channeling 100% of our resources at this point in terms of staff and time to continuing our warehouse and distribution center operations, sorting and inspecting food and packing that to go out to the communities. We have had a decrease in volunteers, and so we're having to use more of our own staff, repurposing staff who maybe aren't normally in a distribution center to get that work done. The other way we're being impacted really is kind of the shift in our role. During times of crisis, food banks across the country, including ours here in Maine, work closely with other agencies, including the Maine Center for Disease Control, MEMA, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Education, Health and Human Services, as we're talking about today, as well as voluntary organizations that are active in disaster to coordinate efforts so that no one is duplicating and that all needs are getting met. So as an example, this morning, our staff was on a call coordinated with NEMA to really talk about how communities that are experiencing really specific needs are working through the county emergency management groups. And likewise, when we're thinking about responses, we're working with those county level groups as well to make sure that the efforts aren't being duplicated. So we're really seeing a shift in both to maintain our current operations and to respond to a more emerging need.
Erin, what are some ways people can help? I know that a lot of our listeners feel a little bit helpless, feel like they'd like to be able to do something.
Yeah. I think the best way you can help right now is to check on your neighbors, check on vulnerable community members, make sure that they have access to food, help them pick up those prescriptions, go to the grocery store for them. And if needed, contact the local food pantry to find out how they're servicing their community right now and see if you can make an appointment or a way to get food for your neighbors. This is not a time for Mainers to be shy. If families need help, it is time to speak up and to ask each other for that support. So check on your community members, check on your local food pantries and other organizations to see what help they need, and certainly support those organizations that are providing those critical responses.
Well, Erin Fogg, thanks so much for calling in today. That's Erin Fogg. She's with the Good Shepherd Food Bank. Jean, I'm going to start with an email because it's related to what Erin was just talking about. This is from Beth. How will the school lunches be delivered to children? Will school bus drivers deliver food to students on their routes?
So already our Department of Education has sought waivers from the federal government to be able to actually, I think it's been approved as well as sought a waiver to be able to provide meals off-site to students the same way they do it in the summer. So we have started the process already through the Department of Education. We're continuing to look at what other options we now have under the state of emergency to provide those sorts of food, food resources for children, but also, again, homebound older Mainers, because that is a vulnerable population that also is at risk of COVID-19. We are hopeful that this legislation I mentioned earlier passes because it, among other things, would provide $400 million to assist local food banks to meet increased demand. I'd also note that the governor wants us to look at food supply, because one thing that's become apparent in Maine, as it has in other states, is that a lot of people are stocking up on food, and we're a little bit worried about how we make sure that people have nutritious and affordable access to food. So that's another part of our COVID response team.
So encouraging people not to stock up and hoard food.
There, we should all look after our neighbors and our friends and our family, as Erin said.
We'll go to Sharon, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. Sorry, I just need to pull up my question here. All right. So my question is about the difficulty facing a growing population of entirely self-employed Mainers, or folks who are independent contractors and file a Schedule C. That population is also concerned about access to unemployment benefits, not extending to non-employees, many of which alone would be a really unrealistic solution. Additionally, it's been notoriously difficult thus far with the ABOD rules for that population to qualify for SNAP and other assistance. Due to the way we calculate hours worked based on income and deductions rather than actual hours worked, which for a lot of people includes a lot of unpaid hours and tasks that are required of them to stay afloat, will we see these issues addressed? And not to get ahead of ourselves, but will we see a change going forward in how that access is calculated to include our growing gig economy?
I can speak to part of your question, but I do know that Commissioner Laura Fortman at the Department of Labor and Commissioner Heather Johnson at the Department of Economic and Community Development are hard at work thinking about all workers, including people like you. We recognize the special challenges that people who are self-employed face, and we are absolutely hard at work looking for solutions. You mentioned one acronym that I'm very familiar with, though, ABOD. This is a term used about who gets benefits, and oftentimes there's a work requirement for a food supplement program that disqualifies people. We did get a waiver last year to extend access to food supplement to these so-called ABODs. That, again, is what the Trump administration restricted, but we are using some discretion and some of our options to make sure that throughout the state of Maine, anybody who otherwise would qualify for food supplement benefit gets it, and that will be effective April 1st.
Sharon, thanks for your question. An email here from Michelle. My daycare alone can expose over 100 people through children, parents, siblings, grandparents, and my workers. The educated thing to do is be unified in the decision like all schools have done. Is DHHS waiting to find out someone is on a respirator due to a child in daycare being a carrier to someone compromised? This is not up to each daycare. All of our safety guidelines are being driven by the licensing board. This should be an administrative decision. The CDC stated children should not be in close proximity. Do what's right. Keep our Maine families safe.
We share 100% the goal of keeping Maine families safe, and that is why we have been pushing out through both our licensure as well as our other networks of child care providers the guidance recommended by U.S. CDC, by Maine CDC, about how to keep children, their child care providers, and their families safe. As the governor said last night, she took the action to declare the state of civil emergency, so she has authorities and powers as needed. She believes, and we've seen evidence, that throughout the state of Maine, our providers, our businesses, our hospitals, our healthcare systems have been responding to that kind of guidance. Should we see evidence that that's not working, we'll consider other steps, but we are continuing to do our work to work hand in glove with our child care providers who share the goal of keeping kids safe, keeping their providers safe, and keeping their families and grandparents safe.
We'll go to Fritz, who's calling from Harmony. Hi, Fritz. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Right off this crisis, they said the white-collar workers should work from home. But yet, what I'm calling about is those who, Maine workers, who work in the hospitals and the nursing homes and who do the cleaning and direct hands-on handling of the patients and feeding of the patients. Many of them earn not a living wage. So most of them are now have a second job, which means when they come back from the second job to their regular job, they're bringing whatever exposure they have from that. I just wonder how are they going to handle this situation? You know, they've set it up so that those who can't survive on one job yet are the front line of these situations. You know, they should be at least being paid a living wage so they don't have to do a second job. You know, we always worry about the white-collar workers. Why not worry about those who are the first hands?
Thank you, Fritz. Go ahead, Commissioner Lambrew.
Sure. While the state of Maine doesn't set wages for our health care workers, we do set Maine Care or Medicaid payment rates. And in the past few weeks, we have been looking aggressively at, are there areas where, as needed, we should increase them to get at that point of ensuring a livable wage. And, you know, as the legislature is wrapping up its work in the next 24 hours, we're hopeful that they do help us increase some of our Maine Care rates to provide workers just like you, those frontline workers, to make sure that they have those living wages.
Fritz, thanks for your question. We're going to go to an email from Mary Jane. Where do you find guidelines for older adults who are living in multi-unit housing complexes on preventing the spread of the virus in their apartments and common areas? So is there a good website? Is there a good place where people can get that information?
First of all, most of our information is either on or can be linked to from our Maine Department of Health and Human Services site, and that would be www.maine.gov/DHHS, like Department of Health and Human Services, /coronavirus. And we should be able to link to that guidance. We often draw from the U.S. CDC, and the Maine State Housing Authority has also been a very good partner in trying to figure out how we give specific actionable guidance to circumstances like this.
All right. We'll go to Gary, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Gary. Go ahead. Gary, are you there? Shoot. Okay. Then we'll go to Greg, calling from Monroe. Greg, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. This has got to be one of the most inspiring programs you've ever run. All these people doing all these things. It's amazing. It's just wonderful. Here's my question. We're making so many preparations to prevent the spread, but what are we doing for the people who are going to fall sick? We should be building hospitals in 10 days like China and so on, but I don't hear anything about expanding the number of ventilators or hospital beds in Maine, and I'm afraid so many are going to die unnecessarily. What can we do?
Thank you, Greg. Commissioner Lambrew.
I have a list of worries. It's a very long list of worries, and this is one on it, but it's also something that we have a team that's planning to act on that. We are trying to make sure that we have an aggressive, almost twice a day update of a database about where are the beds, where are the respirators, what is our capacity to treat people. We continue to ask the federal government for additional help in these personal protective equipment, in supplies, in demands. I mean, it's clear, given what you said, we do have this global pandemic. There is a challenge in getting the kind of supplies that we need to keep people safe. We are being as aggressive as we can and trying to make sure we have that. But rest assured, we do have people looking at our hospital capacity to treat people because, as you know, the governor said last night, it will get worse before it gets better.
Greg, thank you so much for your call. If you have a call, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Want to mention that every day this week, Maine Calling will be focusing on a different aspect of the coronavirus pandemic. And today we are getting many medical questions about COVID-19. Tomorrow, a show focused on the medical aspects of the coronavirus pandemic. We can answer those questions at that point. Also, there is all kinds of guidance, again, at the Maine DHHS website, which is going to be linked on our Facebook page and our webpage. We're speaking with DHHS Commissioner Jean Lambrew. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Diversions, Puzzles, and Games by Maine Mall, committed to bringing people together with new and classic games and a variety of puzzles. DiversionsGames.com and Central Maine Healthcare's Topsom Care Center, bringing specialty care, imaging, lab services, and more to one convenient location at the Topsom Fair Mall.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Samoset, an Abenaki Sagamore, is the first Native American to make contact with the settlers in Plymouth on March 16, 1621. According to a 1622 account, quote, "He very boldly came all alone and along the houses straight to the rendezvous, where we intercepted him, not suffering him to go in, as undoubtedly he would out of his boldness. He saluted us in English and bade us welcome." Samoset had learned English from the fishermen frequenting the waters off Monhegan Island.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Thomaston Place Auction Galleries and Maine Maritime Museum. Happy birthday, Maine! On the next Speaking in Maine, Pakistan.
You can't fight ideologies with military. You can only be a catalyst.
Shuja Nawaz is a distinguished fellow at the South Asia Center at the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C. He spoke at the Mid-Coast Forum on Foreign Relations in Rockport about the interplay between Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Monday afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the Commissioner of Health and Human Services here in Maine, Jean Lambrew. We are discussing some of the statewide response to the coronavirus. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. There's an email here from Nancy. To follow the advice of experts, it seems Maine should be encouraging or even requiring that non-essential gathering of any size be curtailed among all of us. My husband and I, without any obvious cause, are self-isolating as a prudent measure for ourselves and the community. We have taken some flack from friends, but as soon as we send them reliable articles about the importance of community separation, they are similarly concerned. It seems the importance of this cannot be overstated. You know, Commissioner Lambrew, we're having this conversation right as some states right to our south, including New York and Connecticut, have said, don't go to restaurants, take out only. What are we considering in Maine in terms of mandates when it comes to gatherings and when it comes to public places?
I think connecting the previous caller with this question, I would say the best way that we can treat people who have COVID-19 is to flatten the curve. What that means is slow the rapid spread, try to really ensure that we know there will be more cases, but the more we can prevent that proximate cluster of many people getting ill, the better we can treat them. How do we do this? What that person just said. We need to try to take the common sense measures of social distancing, try to stay 6 feet away from people. There's a lot of guidance about hands. Try not to shake people's hands. Make sure you wash your hands and try not to touch your face with your hands, which, as everybody on this who's listening probably knows, is a lot harder than you think.
Yep.
And I think the governor, as she said last night, thinks that if we do this now as recommendations, it will thin those crowds so we can still have an ability to gather in small groups safely, that we can begin to continue to engage with each other, because there is a risk of total social isolation leading to other problems. We have to counterbalance our public health response to prevent the spread of coronavirus with not causing mental health, substance use disorders, other challenges that are harmful to the people of Maine as well.
So be reasonable, but don't completely cut off contact with people you care about?
There's also many other ways that you can have contact with people. FaceTiming, emails, phone calls. There's many different ways in this time and age that we can stay connected without putting each other at risk.
All right. We're going to go to Corrine, who's calling from South Portland. Hi, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. I'm concerned about our folks in the homeless shelters and want to find out what's being done there. Are they being screened? Are their temperatures being taken? Are they being quarantined? Thank you.
Commissioner?
We have a group that is meeting as we speak, or I should say talking as we speak, because we are trying to limit our meetings to really look at the challenges that have been experienced with our homeless shelters. We appreciate that not only do we have many people in a small space, but we don't have an easy ability for people who are at risk of COVID-19 of self-isolating and preventing spread. So we are on it. I don't have the answer at this moment, but we are working with the different homeless shelters in the state, the city of Portland. We've been contacted by Bangor. We are working aggressively to find solutions to give homeless people the same type of access to testing and self-isolation as treatment as other people.
All right, Corrine, thanks so much for your call. An email here from Chris. My mom is in her early 70s and works as a counselor serving a vulnerable population, many of whom receive Maine Care benefits. Since last week, she's been meeting her clients and filing her reports remotely, but her agency is not able to bill for this work, and she is not able to be paid due to rules that require the work be done in person. Can this rule be waived temporarily to protect the safety of clients and clinicians?
We are absolutely looking at waiving in-person requirements for reporting for verification, including we're looking at whether that's possible for prescribing drugs, even for substance use disorder. So we are looking at any and all opportunities to make sure that our clinicians, our healthcare providers, our counselors can maintain services at this critical time. And that does include telehealth. Maine actually is a leader in the nation in its laws and support for telehealth. We are going to take that up a step in this crisis, because we know that's a way to make sure that people can get healthcare without leaving their homes, without going to doctor's offices.
All right. We'll go to Allison, who's calling from Skowhegan. Hi, Allison. Go ahead.
Hi, Ms. Rooks, and thank you, Commissioner Lambrew. What is your plan to determine essential workers for DHHS and allow others to work from home or get paid admin leave to reduce potential spread of the virus?
So the state of Maine is working every day to update its guidance for its own workers. At the Department of Health and Human Services, I care a lot about the department's workers because we often are engaging with people in our offices, in our hospitals, out in the field. So we expect to, in the coming days, continue to each day advance opportunities for workers to have, again, social distancing within the offices, opportunities for remote working when possible, and we're working with our other colleagues about how that will be supported.
All right, Allison, thanks for your question. An email here from Carol, another child care question. Governor Mills has asked that child cares have flexibility in ratios in order to accommodate children who aren't in schools. There are also a number of pop-up child cares happening that are not being regulated. It seems that this is the opposite of social distancing, and the request that we accommodate more children puts us, our children, and our homes at an increased risk of exposure. We also do not have any more access to supplies than the regular population. DHHS, which normally regulates anything we do, has offered absolutely no guidance to us. Is the expectation that child cares are now first providers?
I appreciate the challenges that our child care providers are facing right now. It is an evolving situation, and each provider faces different challenges. So I thank you for your work, and I will commit to the fact that we are going to be putting out more guidance for different types of child care providers in the coming days. The flexibility that I mentioned was partly to, where feasible and possible, to stand up these sorts of child care centers, but that doesn't obviate the need to help those that exist. And we appreciate that it's not the type of business where if there's an economic downturn, there's a lot of reserves you can tap into. So we are looking also at what kind of supports we can provide child care providers, especially those small ones, during these tough times.
All right. We'll go to John, who's calling from Kennebunk. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Couple things. First off, I stopped at my pharmacy this morning to see if I could get a prescription refilled early for my wife. And they told me, no, I couldn't. That meant I wouldn't pay for it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I don't understand why we don't learn from history. I mean, even recent history, if you look at Italy and Spain, the only way they could control this virus was for people to stay home. And I was watching a doctor from Italy, and he said the United States still had a window of opportunity to keep people home and stop the spread of this, but for some reason, we're not. And I heard the newspaper, today that China says their first case was in November now, and so that means that's pretty much the summer. I'll hang up, and you can answer me on the radio. Thanks.
Sure. I'll remind folks that we already implemented this recommendation against large gatherings. We started at 250 people. We're down to 50. We also recommend against gatherings of 10 or more people when they're particularly vulnerable, like older minors. We also recommend ending classroom instruction in all public schools as soon as it's reasonably practical, trying to, again, prevent those large gatherings. We are taking action. We are making recommendations. We are seeing the effect. As you know, the bicentennial celebration was canceled yesterday. Important milestones are going to be celebrated in different ways to get at exactly what the caller mentioned, preventing spread. And we will continue to take measures and accelerate those as needed.
All right. An email here from Jamie. Physicians have always provided different aspects of acute care and chronic disease management with phone calls. Physicians can manage many conditions and symptoms over the phone. There are actual billing codes for phone management, and we need to put pressure on our insurance and government payers to cover those phone call visit codes.
And I will say we'll look into it. Again, at this moment in time, when we see ideas that are a twofer, right? It both simplifies access to doctors for patients as well as helps us prevent spread. We will look at any and all such ideas.
All right. We have an email from Jennifer. As a Maine healthcare provider, I hear some pretty worrisome misinformation out there. For example, a friend reported that a local physician told folks who flew home from a high-risk country that, quote, if they didn't have symptoms in 4 days, they were all clear. It is particularly important in these days not to pass along information that's well-meant but inaccurate. 14 days is the recommended amount of time to self-quarantine. Good sites for information, the World Health Organization site and the Centers for Disease Control. Thanks to the commissioner for her good work. Here's to flattening the curve.
I thank that caller for good medical advice and good citations. I would also say that for people who have basic questions, 211 is now available to answer those questions. You can just dial 211. You could text your zip code to 898-211. Or email info@211maine.org.
All right. We'll go to Lynn calling from Blue Hill.
Hi. I'm
Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering if there's going to be an increase in food stamp allotment.
So we will continue to provide food supplements as we have been. We're looking at whether or not that would need to increase. We're evaluating all options. There might be some federal relief on the way that would help Maine do that. But again, all options are on the table, and we are gauging need as we go through these coming days and weeks.
All right, Lynn, thank you. And that's what you meant, individual, as opposed to will there be more people needing TANF or food stamps, correct? I guess we've lost her. Thank you. So, it's funny, Commissioner, I was going to give you some time at the end to tell us about 211. But 211, it will answer questions. Your website, we have mentioned, maine.gov/DHHS/coronavirus. And all of those links on our website. Is there anything you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
I would commend the people of Maine, the partners of Maine. We've heard some of them on this call in. As well as actors across state government, the spirit with which everybody has seen this challenge, pulled together, come up with creative solutions, and then keep going, because a solution today may be done and we need a new one tomorrow. This is not going to be easy, but the spirit with which the state has come together, led by Governor Mills, has given me hope that, again, while it will get worse before it gets better, it will get better.
Commissioner Lambrew, thanks for joining us. That's Jean Lambrew, Maine's Commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. If you have more coronavirus-related questions, we encourage you to call the Maine Calling voicemail at 207-370-3487. Again, 207-370-3487. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.